Naveed, you and your team at the University of Calgary have just published some important research. You've created a chip that communicates with brain cells. What's this all about?
We're actually very excited because if you recall, in 2004, in collaboration with Max Planck Institute in Germany, we had generated the first bionic hybrid whereby an electronic device such as chip was manufactured or prepared in such a way that it could talk to the brain cells and then brain could talk back to the brain cells. And I think that was a important proof of principle for any bionic hybrid that could allow you to regain lost brain function through if that occurred through injury, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, or disease, or trauma. And I think at that time what we were doing was, that, again, collaborating with the German group, and then we started to realize that, well, of course, that data was very useful in recording from snail brain cells, but to be able to take it to the next step, which is in the rats or in humans, we needed to make sure that we enhance the sensitivity of the chip that could allow us to monitor very subtle changes in the ionic excitability. So if you think about a membrane, it has pores, which we call ion channels, and these ions move across those channels to make cell excited or make fire impulses. And I think those ion channels and the changes in ion channels, which are very subtle, they define the behavior of a brain cell and as a result define the behavior or an output of a network. So I think it's very important that one acquires the ability to monitor those ion channels because they determine not only the function or the behavior of a single brain cell, but the entire network. And this is why all the drug companies are particularly interested in targeting those ion channels for therapeutic purposes. So we wanted to also develop this in-house, made-in-Canada technology. We started to collaborate with NRC, which is the National Research Council in Ottawa. It's a federally funded agency which has state-of-the-art chip fabrication and design facility. So with our collaborators there, we have been able to produce the first chip that not only record ion channel activity from brain cells with greater ease and high fidelity than any other technologies that exist in the world, but more importantly, we can actually record brain cell ion channel activity for many days. This has never been done before. And I think that opens up the possibility for high-throughput drug screening and also to understand brain function or the network function from both normal and a diseased brain at a resolution which is really has not been attained before.
What does this chip look like, and where exactly would you put it in the brain?
So this chip is actually currently 1 millimeter square, you know, there are a number of little electrodes placed directly onto the chip, and then the brain cells could either be placed, and this is what we have done, and we have shown the proof of principle, have not really designed or prepared it for implantation because that has a new sets of challenges that still needs to be overcome. But from a recording device, which we have right now, it's a 1 millimeter square chip that could have number of these holes that can patch the cell. And all the other things, the microfluidics and the recording machinery runs underneath the chip. So in terms of if you were to think about its implications for health, think about surgeons who are working on an epileptic patient, and they are removing the epileptic foci. They are doing surgeries because this patient did not respond to drugs, and so they had no choice but to go on in and take out that epileptic tissue. And what we could do now is to take that tissue from surgeons and then put it on our chip. We can study the behavior of human epileptic tissue with exquisite accuracy, and then do high-throughput drug screening to see which drug actually can block seizures or a cocktail of drugs that can block seizure activity in that particular patient. And the reason for doing this is that inevitably 2 or 3 years down the line, these people also become once again, you know, epileptic as well. So now, having gone through screening a number of drugs, one would have a personalized medication for that individual should they become epileptic again. So I think that the applications are still at the level of drug screening, drug discovery, drug develop for individual patients, but we are still quite far away from being able to implant these devices.
Well, once the device is implanted, would it stay in the person's brain forever, or is it a temporary insertion?
So I think in most cases, I think the ideal thing, again, when you think about devices that could be put in the brain, and there are many complications in the brain, the blood, anything that could come between the brain cell and the device could interfere the recording capability. You don't also want to go deep into the brain because you have to drill a hole or kill some of the brain tissue to be able to implant this chip. For example, that's what is done in Parkinsonian patients when they have these deep brain stimulation electrodes that have to go through the brain to a specific area to be able to stimulate the activities of the brain cells that have been rendered dysfunctional. So I think our idea is that, for instance, you could have a subcortical implant, which sits really on top of your head, or close to your cochlear implant, very close to your ear. And then what it could do is, and actually it could detect, for example, seizure-like activity in patients. And the device could then call in your cell phone informing you that you're about to have seizures. And it can also actually dial the healthcare personnel or send an ambulance and give them the exact location through a GPS system. So the applications are really manifold, but they will have to be merged one by one. But you could think about that each and every brain cell has a very unique firing pattern. And those firing patterns are like fingerprints. And each and every fingerprint in individuals is very, very unique. There are 6 billion people on the planet. No two thumbprints are identical. Similarly, each and every brain cell fires a very unique pattern. And that pattern, as I said, is determined by the ion channel activities of the brain cell. And if one could get access to monitoring the ion channel activity, now you could understand how different thumbprints look like. And what you could then do is to, if you were to implant a device in a patient who, for example, has addiction to drugs or has pain, and these pain fibers or these addiction-related brain cells fire a very unique pattern. If your device, which is sitting outside subcortically on the brain, could recognize those firing patterns, it could actually, like a cell phone, dial in and tell them, guys, it's okay, calm down, no need to get excited here. So you can actually have this frequency targeting through a device to be very, very precisely pick up the brain activity without going deep into the brain and making a physical contact with the cell. So I think, you know, the next iteration that we would like to work is to have a device that sits on top of the head, but then it is just like your cell phone. I gave this example actually many times that I was watching a football game between Saskatchewan Rough Riders and Calgary, a local team, and then somebody called me. And when I thought about it, I said there are 30,000 people, but anybody could track me with 7-digit number anywhere in the world. And when I pick up the phone, I am the only one talking, even though everybody else has a cell phone here. So engineers have figured out how to target individual units based on the frequencies. Why can't we do this for a human brain as well?
When do you expect that we'll actually see this in use?
You know, in next, I think, couple of months, we are starting with the human cells. And once that is opened up and we can record the activity and manipulate the activity, I think that then the next step is to be able to seek out partnerships whereby we can collaborate with other universities where they have capabilities for implanting in larger animals. So I would say anywhere, this is something that was always considered as science fiction, that we could have these bionic hybrids implanted. But, you know, if you look around, you will see that the tremendous progress is being made in tapping into the information capabilities of the brain, either controlling, having a robot or robotic dog controlled through human brain, or a monkey who has a device implanted controlling a robotic robot to feed him the food. So I think, you know, once all these different technologies, when they will merge, I would say the next 5 years you might be able to see, you know, the first sets of implantable devices.
Who has helped you along the way?
Well, I think, you know, we have a tremendous support from our funding agencies. For example, the Alberta Heritage, which is now Alberta Inuit Health Solution. And, you know, they supported my career and they provided me with equipment as well as many other fundamental tools that we needed to be able to get started. And similarly, one of my students who played a very important critical role in the whole project, Colin Luke, who was he's also a recipient of Alberta Heritage Studentship. So I think the funding that is provided really plays a very critical role for us to move and these things forward and move Alberta in the front and center and right for the innovations that is really critical for us to develop and also to be able to put it in the market. We need to become an innovation-savvy nation, and any agency that stimulates this actually makes Canada a leader in the world.
Naveed, thank you very much.
Thank you.